My name's Marvin, and I am an alcoholic. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be here speaking in front of you at an AA group. I want to thank for the dinner last night and inviting me, the group that I was with, Susan and Marcy, Julie and Steve, Shirley, Kara, Ward, and Joe. I think that covers the bases. And I was listening to Shirley. She was at the table that I was having breakfast at, and she was talking about working at Texas A&M. And my college roommate now has a daughter who's an Aggie, and I was just wondering if she ever heard about the new student on the campus there. And the this young lad was totally lost and saw this older guy with a pipe and the leather patch and carrying a briefcase, and he says, "Excuse me, sir, do you know where the library's at?" And took the pipe out of his mouth and says, "Son, at this institution, we don't end the sentence with a preposition." And kid thinks for a minute, says, "Do you know where the library's at, asshole?" Well, I'm glad to be here, and I have a. My story's a little bit different than what your normal drunkalogue is, and my views on life are a little bit different than some people. So, if you find something that's useful, take it. And if you find something that you disagree with, you know, just cast it aside. You know, you are the sum of the parts of what you've been. And in my family, I'm going to talk about the pedigree, not because, you know, it's all this wonderful stuff, but it'll understand my state of mind as I grew up. My great-grandfather was a physician. My grandmother and grandfather were physicians. In fact, my grandmother once was accused when she was in medical school of cheating, and she said, "Well, would you like to retest me verbally or written?" So she took another test and passed it with ease. He was afraid that she had cheated because it was verbatim out of the book. Well, he didn't realize that she had a photographic memory, and she proceeded to score the highest score in the Georgia Medical Boards ever made. My father is a doctor. My two uncles are doctors, and my grandfather's brother was a doctor. My grandfather in particular, we used to have a dinner, a noon meal, and, you know, it wasn't dementia, but I don't know, maybe it's a statistics streak in him. He used to grab us and tell us the same stories over and over and over again, and he was death on alcoholics. And, you know, they were the scum of the earth. And that was pretty much the view in our family. And you were supposed to make something of yourself. It was your duty to make something of yourself. And I have to admit that he had some good points, particularly when he was preaching to my sister about how important it was to be able to support yourself. And if circumstances made that you were single and you had a child, that you could provide. With that being said, I too had a very different feeling when I was growing up. I remember I must have been like 3 or 4 or something like that, feeling like, well, this is like a play, you know. And I remember running around the backyard to see if they'd moved the set or not. And I mean, this strangeness of not being able to connect to reality was a continuing problem for a long, long time. As far as alcohol is concerned, my mother's a teetotaler, and she says she's allergic to it, literally. She's had a little something to drink, and it made her back hurt. And my father, she was Southern Baptist, so I can say something about it. And I saw my dad only once in the entire time through high school take a drink, and that was because an old buddy of his showed up, and they had one of those little zippered cases, and he poured a drink, and my dad had a drink to be sociable with him. So there's no history on my grandparents were teetotalers on my father's side, and as far as I know, on my mother's side, too. So I'm not quite sure where this disease came from, but I can tell you that both of my brothers have, I don't know that they're alcoholic, because I don't see them that much anymore, but they have a serious drinking problem if it's not alcoholism. When I was growing up, I had a difficult childhood in that I had asthma, and I had horrible asthma, the kind that people sometimes die of. And I noticed, too, that my brothers and sisters always made good grades, and I had to struggle. I really had to struggle to do well and to leap ahead of the story. I remember when I graduated from the university, and my dad says, "Well, son, you finally did it. I thought you had bugs in your head, but you not exactly what you want to hear after killing yourself." I tell you, we put the fun in dysfunction. Because I had asthma, my dad was a doctor, and they decided that they were going to take a summer vacation from Tampa, Florida, up to Alaska, and in the process, he was going to go to different research facilities and check out what they were doing for asthma, see if he couldn't do something for me, and so we did, and we crisscrossed the country and ended up in Alaska, and then on the way back, fortunately, it was before we got to Denver, my mother told me, and I'm not exactly where she told me this, but she said, "Oh, by the way, son, we're going to drop you off in Denver." My dad never bothered to say anything. He pretty much showed up and said, "See you later, son. Good luck." And it was off, and it's like, I never thought this was really a problem, you know, but as I look back on it, I did have feelings of abandonment on it. And if anything like that happens to you, it strangely affects you later on. Let's fast forward to high school. By the time I got to high school, I was playing football. Not very well, but I was playing. Kind of like a doormat. At 6'1 and 165 pounds, I took a beating. But I knew that from the first drink that I had, I liked that. And by the second time I had anything to drink, I was drunk. And even then, I kind of knew that, you know, this isn't quite right. First of all, I felt guilty because family didn't believe in this kind of stuff, behavior. I do remember once driving around, and I said, you know, I shouldn't do this anymore. I took the half-empty fifth, tossed it into the bushes and drove off. And next week I was out there looking for it. And from there, I got to tell you this little vignette. I went to prep school for a while and didn't do so well. But I used to go drinking with two other kids, and one of them's dad was a doctor, and we went over to his house, and I'm pretty sure the dad was an alcoholic. They had all kinds of booze, and we used to just get drunk as skunks, and I never did get a DUI, and we used to play this little game trying to recite part of Alice in Wonderland after we had four beers, and you know, it was the old thing about "The time has come," the walrus said, "to speak of many things, of shoes and chips and sealing wax and cabbages and kings, and why is the sea boiling hot and why do pigs have wings? Has thou not seen the jabberwock, my friend, the jaws that bite, the jaws, the claws that catch, beware the jute-jute bird, and shun the frumious bundersnatch," and it goes on, oh happy day, kalu-kalay. I tell you what, it's hard enough sober to get through that. And I was always amazed that these two guys could usually do it. Well, little did I know that one would go to University of Pennsylvania and the other went to Yale. So I always feel a little inferior, and I certainly did, when you're with people who are very bright. Okay, if you want to feel superior, hang around with dumb people, but not not people who are going to score like 750 on the math and 790 on the English part of the, you know, their SATs. I went to Pfeiffer College. It was a small school, and they figured that I probably could handle that environment. And you know, it's a long time ago when got there and the cigarettes were 25 cents a pack. And one of the first things my buddy drove me up that I used to drink with, and we went to the store and got cigarettes and asked if we could buy beer, and she said, "Thank God this is a dry county." And, well, that didn't stop me. And I didn't do very well, and I know that back then I was kind of an ornery guy in some ways. I was stubborn. I was taking chemistry, and I didn't like the lab, so I just stopped going. Not knowing what the consequences would be, or even if I knew, I didn't care. I came back. My dad, of course, was very disappointed with me, and I started working at a at Tampa General Hospital in the psych ward. And by this time, a clear pattern had already established itself for me, and that is that when the Big Book talks about people who have grave emotional and mental disorders, I was getting cyclical depression, and every 3 months I'd start having trouble dealing with this. And they didn't have the wide variety of serotonin uptake inhibitors and the like back then that they do now. So you pretty much gritted your teeth and tried to get through with it. So this is really quite embarrassing for me, because I was working there, and one of those episodes happened, and I got horribly depressed, and I ended up trying to kill myself, and I had a key to my dad's office. And so I opened it up, and he had these drawers full of stuff. I had no clue what they were, but I just started taking them and working my way down. And, oh, these pink ones look good, and these red ones ought to help. And the blue ones, oh, I like the color, you know. And to this day, I have a resentment to my brother, because he discovered me the next day unconscious. They took me to the hospital, pumped my stomach, and I stayed there. And then they put me in the very ward that I'd been working at. Yeah, talk about trying to get through something. That was just horribly embarrassing. And I was resentful for my brother because, you know, when I had these episodes of depression, it was so bad that I wish I were dead. And my thinking was this. He saved me from that, so now I have to suffer some more. Some of you may identify with that. I didn't do very well. From there, I went up. I was had some job. I went up to Philadelphia, where one of my prep school buddies was, and I was looking for work, and I was offered a job in a chemistry lab in a hospital, and they were doing tests. Well, back, you know, now they got... draw some blood, and they put it in these giant machines, and it processes it through. And then they were doing it with pipettes, and you know, you turn the alarm clock. Well, I can tell you one thing. To this day, I'm lousy at multitasking, and that required an enormous amount of multitasking, and I didn't do very well in chemistry to begin with. But I needed a job. I needed a job. And so I continued to do that job, even though I was starting to get pretty concerned whether my results were valid or not. And then finally, my conscience bothered me so much that I decided to resign. And when I was talking to the director, he was an alcoholic. And I was telling him, you know, I really feel badly about this, and perhaps, you know, I might have killed somebody with it. And he didn't say, no, son, that's okay, that didn't happen. He didn't say anything. He just stared at me like Mount Rushmore. And so for the next, until recently, I carried that with me. I don't know about you, but if guilt gave air miles, you know, I'd be a frequent flyer. You know, I'd drink. The guilt get bad enough and I'd drink. And it was still under semi-control at that time, but it was clearly an unhealthy pattern, and clearly I should have had the fortitude to have said, when I realized that this just wasn't for me, to have quit and gone on rather than endure all the self-hate. From there, I went back to Florida, and I went into St. Pete Junior College, and I actually graduated from there. And I remember somebody was looking at my transcripts, and they said, I didn't know that you could graduate with such a low GPA. True story. Well, from there I went to FAU, and FAU was an experimental school, junior, seniors, and graduate students. Suddenly they took the junior college group, and they went there, and I loved it. And first day or two there, my new roommate was Lane, and Lane was from the big city, Chicago. And I was still something of a, you know, bumpkin. I didn't know about all the city ways. And he says, want to smoke a joint? And I, oh, no, you know. Okay. And I thought, well, I like this. And then I started drinking on the days that I didn't smoke. And then finally I was able to get a synthesis of the best of both worlds. He had a brass hookah. We put wine in it. And we smoked through it. And then by the end of the week, I drink the wine. And I can tell you, that brass taste is awful. I remember thinking about it towards the end of my, I think it was in my senior year, and I says, you know, I've been either stoned or drunk virtually every day I've been here. And then I kind of shook my shoulders. And I got a little funny story to tell you. It doesn't have a whole lot to do with my drinking. I met a gal there, and name, can I use a name? Her name was Lynn. And both her parents were alcoholics. And, of course, I didn't know anything about children of alcoholics and how they behave. But she was really a bright gal, and I enjoyed her company. And many years later, she moved to Denver. I had occasion to visit a manufacturing plant in Denver, and I saw her, and we had some fun. And then I got this letter in the mail about 3 or 4 days later saying, Marvin, I'm a lesbian now, and would you father my child? And the joke, family joke became, when I went back to Florida to visit my family, my wife at the time would say, when somebody asked her if they were concerned about what I was going to be doing, she said no. She said, the last girl that Marvin dated in Florida turned into a lesbian after she dated him. I did graduate from Florida Atlantic University, even though I was pot smoking and drinking. And some people graduate magna cum laude. Some people graduate summa cum laude. I graduated. Thank you, Laude. Now, I put all that hard one education to work, swinging a hammer doing construction. And I had no plan. So I figured, you know, you didn't have to be too bright to do that, and I could probably swing a hammer. So I did. I did that. It was a construction worker, and then became a subcontractor, and did that. And I, you know, sometimes you look for coincidences to help you. And I remember I was thinking about, after I graduated from college, you know, what I should do. And I said, God, give me a sign. And this truck came by right after that, a van, actually. And it said Townsend Belt Construction. And I said, I know Townsend Belt. He goes and called him up. He says, come on down. And hired me, and I had a job. And I'll make a long story short, but this is an integral part to later on. His daughter worked in the office, and one thing led to another, and we got engaged, and then she went off to graduate school and came back and said, we are going to break this off. And I said, okay. So it was a terrible disappointment to me, and enough so that I didn't date for a year after that. And but I would sit on the porch and drink and play, you know, some sort of heartbreak music in the background. And that was a pretty poor way of handling rejection. But it, at that point, liquor and beer had been become a way of alleviating pain. I have to have notes or else I'll be wandering. You know, when I used to teach, I'm going to get to that, but I'd use PowerPoint not because I wanted to read PowerPoint. That's pretty lame. But because keep me on track, make sure that I didn't forget to say something. And so you'll forgive the notes. After, when I was getting close to being 30, I decided that it's now time to make, to do something other than construction and maintenance. And my drinking was starting to get a little out of hand, and but it wasn't totally out of hand. I went to Chicago. I made a list of companies I wanted to work for. I talked to my old college roommate. He said, why don't you come to Chicago and interview? We've got lots of people up here that you can interview with. I went up there. I interviewed. I got a job with Klein Tools. They gave me a week's worth of training, a map, keys to the car, an account book, and said, drive out to Salt Lake City and good luck, kid. And at the end of the first year, I had a 41% increase in business. And I became regional sales manager, which was one of my goals. And to do that, I had to go back to Chicago. Now, you need to play corporate politics and be careful of what you do. And I got to tell you that like some people I know, you have a tendency just to say what's on your mind. And my boss was getting close to retirement, and he didn't want anyone rocking the boat, especially me. And it didn't help that I was in a traffic accident after drinking with the chairman of the board's son. It was not really a very smooth move. In fact, I got in contact with him, and just when I was ready to work up the nerve to say that you know, I was an alcoholic and that I was so sorry about what happened, he either blocked me from his email list or he discontinued and went to another provider. I guess someday I'll have to do that. So they gave me a 10% raise to be regional sales manager, and after about 6 months, actually I was pretty successful at it. I took a region that had always been second or third place, and within 6 months they were the first place region, and my boss had enough, tired of me, tired of my attitude, didn't want the boat rocked anymore, and he said he wanted me to quit. So I picked up the phone and called up one of our reps, and he hired me over the phone. And I flew out from Chicago to LAX, picked up a car from him, account book, drove to Ventura. Now, I'm not saying Ventura is a tiny place, but in 1980, when I got there, I drove by. But I remember, I was living in Chicago. I drove by and I said, where's the city? And then I drove back the other way. I go, where's the city? And about the third pass, I kind of think, well, maybe this is the city. And found a place. And if you haven't gathered by now, I'm a risk taker by nature. And when I work for this sales rep, this is the largest sales repping agency in the United States for electrical goods, I said to the owner of the company, now, when I gave a 41% increase to Klein, they gave me a $10 a month increase in pay. I said, are you going to do the same thing if I give you $1 million increase? And he says, oh, no, we'll take care of you. Well, a year went by, and I had given him $1 million increase. Same deal. They recalculated how they were going to do the compensation pattern, but it was exactly the same as I was making before. So I quit. And I had a horrible resentment for a long time over this. And resentments will cause you to drink. I'll guarantee it. For me, it's been one of the seminal points of trying to get sober. Got married, had a couple kids. After I was married about 6-8 years, she says, you know, Marvin, I think you're an alcoholic. And I guess I wasn't too surprised because after the fiasco that I had with the repping agency, I remember very clearly, some people say they passed this invisible line. I didn't pass any invisible line. I said, you know, I got shafted with my fiance. I got shafted for the tool company I worked for the manufacturing reps. I made a decision right there. I said, I don't care if I become an alcoholic. I'm going to drink like I want to. And up until that point, I wouldn't drink until some predetermined time, like sunset or whatever. I had stuff to do. I would put it off. I mean, but it was, you know, I said I wouldn't do that, and I wouldn't do it. Didn't drink and drive usually. And I never got a DUI. But I didn't care anymore. And it's that feeling of loss, that feeling of drifting. And I was starting to have real severe problems with depression. If everything was going well in my life, 2 or 3 days. Okay? If I had a lot of issues going on, it could be weeks. And it wasn't very pretty. So we get to about this point, and she's starting to get pretty unhappy with my drinking, and I was working for a company that made a bunch of promises, and I was put under an enormous amount of pressure, and I started developing something that would just under the surface OCD. I don't know if any of you know what that means, but it came to full life, and it's still a problem, and I can go through a lot of towels, I can tell you that. But it comes and goes. It used to be a continuing problem. And since I quit drinking, it's gotten a lot better. But I used to drink because it was bothering me. Go figure. It's a low dopamine level in the brain that is partly responsible for that. Okay. So I get divorced. I'm on my own. I'm working for Camarillo State Hospital. Does that sound familiar to anyone here? Because you got our forensic patients. And I was working for adult ed, teaching quote-unquote computer science and related technology to a bunch of schizophrenics. I got to tell you, it was the best job I ever had. I was right at home with these people. Every day was different. I have to tell you this vignette. I normally didn't make fun of another group of patients in front of the current ones, but I was kind of amused, and I said, yeah, you know, I said to one of them, in one of my other classes, a student said the computer was sending them messages. Simultaneously, there were three people who said, me too. I got stuck with this one guy who was one of the 22 gods from France. And he came over here and started working for the Army Corps of Engineers, and he was French, and he was upset they weren't giving him French wine and bread for meals. And I talked to his parents, and he said, did he ever work for the Army Corps of Engineers? No, never. I found out he was Scottish before he was French. Well, by this time, I was really had a serious drinking problem, and I knew it. And I couldn't go to work some days because I was afraid to drive because I still had booze in me. And it wasn't fun anymore. Drinking wasn't fun anymore. Governor Pete Wilson closed that hospital. In my estimation and many other people's, it's the finest psychiatric hospital this side of the Mississippi. But for budgetary reasons, he did that. And, now I'm a full-blown alcoholic. At least I didn't lose this job because of my drinking, but I'm out of work. And I kept interviewing and interviewing. I get to the second and third interview, and I wasn't getting a job. And finally, my benefits ran out, and I became homeless. And a fellow who only knew me tangentially said, you can stay on my boat. So I reached a kind of comfortable low bottom until somebody figured out in the marina that you weren't supposed to be living on the boat and you're not supposed to do that. So I got kicked out of the marina. Old habits die hard. So I did what any self-respecting 48-year-old would do at the time. I went home to Mom. Now, I always thought my mom was a little out of being aware of these things, but after about 6 weeks, she says, you ought to do something with your little addiction problem of drinking. So by this point, if I didn't drink, the OCD would come back. I was having these horrible feelings of disassociation from the drinking, miserable depression, and I was estranged from my family and divorced, and I decided that I was going to quit. Now, Mark Twain once said, he's referring to smoking, he said, quitting smoking is easy, I've done it 1,000 times. And with my drinking, I had, before I went back to Florida, I had quit many, many times. In fact, I got so tired of taking newcomer chips that I'd wait till going into the meeting after they did that part of the meeting because I just didn't want to identify as a newcomer for the 58th time. And, I didn't get it. It says it's a simple program. Stop drinking. I didn't get it. I really didn't. I didn't understand. I couldn't. I felt like after about 3 days of not drinking, I was going to explode. Anyone here identify with that? And OCD and get depressed and I drink. Little did I know that the drinking, actually I kind of knew it, but I didn't care. When you drink, you're reducing, you've got a temporary feeling of euphoria, but it's a depressant. So I was depressed to begin with, and I was making myself worse in the long run. So I remember it was. I decided I was going to go back for Christmas, and I was going to quit drinking. So, Monday morning I went over to AAA, got a map, and started across country. And my desire to drink was unbelievable, like it had been so many times before. And I prayed to God. When I was driving, I said, God, please lift the obsession long enough that I can get some sobriety time and I have a chance. Now, if I'd been a little bit smarter, I would have said, lift the obsession and keep it that way, but I mean, never was the brightest bulb, but I knew there was a God in a minute because that feeling went away. I swear it went away. And I proceeded to drive across country, not have a drink. I showed up Christmas Eve. We never sold the house. And it showed up at the house, and she reluctantly thought, well, she'd be a Grinch if she didn't let me come in and stay and for Christmas. So that was a miracle. That was the first of three miracles in short order. Like, that was the second. The first is the obsession left. Second, she let me in. The first day that you could, working business day, I got a job. And that was the third miracle. And I got to tell you that I left out getting a degree in business information systems and getting one and halfway through an electronics degree. So you need to know that. So they wanted an electronics instructor. And I may not do a lot of things very well, but I interview pretty well. And so they hired me to be an electronics instructor. Well, I got to tell you, I was still high from the night before, reeking, when I was working on that electronics degree because the classes were first thing in the morning. I would have much preferred them to be in the afternoon. And so I couldn't remember diddly. So I don't know about you, but for me, the necessity of staying sober was to keep busy. When I had idle time, I got myself into trouble drinking every single time. I went to, I think, 4 meetings in 90 days. I was pounding those books at night to teach in the morning, day and night. I was busy day and night, and that's exactly the job I needed. I did not need to fixate on drinking. Now, that's just me, okay? I'm not telling you to do this, okay? This is just what I did. And it worked out pretty well until they decided that they were going to close the doors to the place. And then I went to another institution and taught computer-related classes, college-level classes. Then after about 3.5 years, we agreed to disagree, and they eased me out. And you don't need to know what happened after that, but finally, I got a job with United Way about a year ago as their program manager for HMIS. In other words, I ran the database for the homeless, and I did instruction to these agencies, public and private, so they could use the software. It was a duck soup job. And I remember one stretch I read 7 books in 7 weeks there, because my office was upstairs, and half the time I was the only one in this big office, and everyone else was downstairs. And it was a great job, and I got an opportunity to make some decent money. And finally, I had another episode that was of depression. And, you know, there were a couple times over the years that I actually, when I was alone, and I actually went and bought liquor, and I have it on the dining room table, and I just looked at that thing and I said, you know, I really, really, really want to have a drink. And once I even poured it into a glass, and both times I didn't. But I was, by the grace of God, it was that close. If you don't have a meaningful program, you're playing roulette with your sobriety. And I was playing roulette with sobriety. I had a romance go sour, and then I got really depressed for 2 months. And I finally went to my sponsor, and I said, the pain that I'm going through now can't be any worse than the misery that I'm going to have going through the steps. Because I didn't want to dredge up my past. I kept stuffing it back where it came from. I didn't want to remember those terrible times in Philadelphia and the other stuff that transpired. And I got to tell you that I started doing the steps with my sponsor. And when I got to step 5, and I did that, an enormous burden was lifted from my shoulders. And we're only talking about 3 months ago. So I'm 8 years sober, never done the steps. You know, if I had done this in the first place, I'd have been a lot happier for a lot longer with a less burden. But, you know, I'm a pretty steel-willed guy. And one of the problems I had with let go, let God as part of the underpinnings of sobriety is that I see where I am. I see where I want to be. I figure out what I need to do, and then I do it. By this time, I had a degree, an AA degree, an AS with honors in business information systems, an AS degree in honors in electronics, a BA degree in history, and a master's in educational technology. And it was very simple after a while. It's like riding a bicycle. Once you get into the groove of doing these things, it's a lot easier to do it. So I'm going to continue doing these steps and get through it. And, you know, you say somebody likes what you've got in a program and you ask them to be a sponsor. No one's ever asked me to be a sponsor. I guess it shows. But, you know, I'm not in favor of counterintuitive ideas. And this business of letting go and letting God is the exact opposite way of I've operated for a long, long time. And I have some of those degrees because that's what I decided I was going to do. I had a plan. When I went to Chicago, I had a plan. When I was in Salt Lake, I worked a plan. And I was successful. And they're polar opposites, letting go and letting God. Well, they're not, but they at first blush, they seem that way. And of late, I want to offer a few things that have helped me. And, you know, when I was in, earlier this year, I was in San Luis Obispo at an AA convention. And I got there a few minutes after it started, and there were only like 3 or 4 seats in a hall that was bigger than this. And so I sat down and shook hands with the guy next to me, and then after the meeting, I met the person next to me. And then the next day, there weren't many seats available at the tables at the barbecue that they were having. And I sat down, and it was the same group the night before. She said, "Ever been a speaker?" I said, "Well, I've been a 10-minute speaker before." She said, "Well, how do you like to speak?" And I, you know, I thought this was just more than coincidence. And so I thought maybe somebody here needed to hear what I went through because it's an atypical story. They usually don't get sober for 8 years without a program. There are some things that if you suffer from depression that I can give you right now. This has nothing to do with AA, so excuse the blasphemy. But and that is, one of the things that haunted me and may have haunted you is you get these ideas of I'm no good, okay? I'm rotten, I'm stupid. And you make yourself a list. You know, good and bad. Draw a line down the middle. And during the day, do this for 3 days. You don't have to, a week would be great, but 3 days you'll get the idea. Every time you get one of these negative ideas, these damning negative ideas, you write it down in the bad column. Okay? And then that night you go and then you say, I am stupid. And on the other side, you don't say, I'm not stupid, because that's, you want to be positive. That's a negative statement. You want to be positive. I am intelligent. I have 5 college degrees. That doesn't make you intelligent, but it makes me feel better. Okay? People hate me. As I said, I have a strong group of people. By the way, do you know what the definition of friendship is? That's when people like you after they've gotten to know you. And you make this list, and you're going to find that fairly quickly the attenuation of these horrible ideas, these bad negative thoughts. See, there are over 100 different brain structures in your head. Go to the Paul Allen Brain Institute site, and there's a beautiful model that you can download. And in the back of your mind, there's these ideas working. How many of you have ever worked on some problem, then all of a sudden you're washing dishes and you go, aha, now I realize what. Okay? There's actually a name for that. It's the Kohler aha insight theory. And it is. And your brain, the quiet, the subconscious part, that's it's processing this stuff. And it's giving you lots of bad stuff, so you need to answer this. And you'll find that after 3 days, you'll feel a whole lot better about yourself. Okay? And then there's some things you can't do anything about because, let's say you had a horrible relationship with your father. You can write a letter to your dad, who's dead, and say, dear dad, you know, I wish you'd come to my baseball game. So all the things you'd wish you'd done and didn't do. And then if you want to take it a further step, you can tear that letter up, put it in a bowl, take it outside and set it on fire. And that symbolic act of seeing the smoke drift away into the ether is a release. There are a number of things that you can do along these lines. There's a positive reinforcement of taking walks and saying, I am a good person. I'm a child of God. I deserve to be happy. And your feeling of self-worth will increase. Try it if you want to. I think you'll be happy with the results. But certainly you won't hurt yourself doing these things. Finally, recently, I got an email out of nowhere. Email said, I have an opportunity for you. Okay. So I asked for a resume and answered some questions, I guess, and sent this thing off. And I got it. And a couple of weeks later, I got a phone call and a note that said, how'd you like to interview with this company? Well, I was kind of happy with United Way, unless I killed my boss. I could probably ride this job into retirement because United Way is not going away, and they're pretty decent people there. And I was doing something that helped the community. And so I interviewed, and I didn't know this until after I'd been offered the job. They had 50 applicants the first week. I did a second interview and met all the managers and the president of the company, and they offered me a manager of IT training. And I moved to Lomita this week and started that job, and it's just a perfect fit. And all those jobs I took where I just had to struggle to do things that really didn't play to my skills, this one seems to be there. And perhaps this is another blessing from God and part of working the steps. I want to encourage the newcomers to hang in there and make friends, talk to people, share with them, go to the meetings, get a sponsor. I don't care if you think it's counterintuitive or not, it'll work. And it's awful, ugly road to do it by yourself like I did. And with that, I want to thank you for having me. God bless you.
Thank you.